What will happen to you then? That cock belongs to the king and queen and the court now, and all the noble and gentlefolk of this kingdom, and even to the common people and the peasants, you understand?
Yes, sir, I understand.
To even the lowliest people of the kingdom it belongs, you understand, no longer to you. Your entire body, your eyes, your voice, all belong to the kingdom.
Yes, sir.
His ministrations continued and lulled me again to the edge of a dreamy, erotic sleep. My cock being the only substantial thing in my mind as I drifted off. When he finally pulled me up by my wrists, I woke up from this half-slumber with a shiver, and once again he smacked my backside very hard with his hand. Suddenly, as if he couldn't stop himself, he put his foot up on a stool and pulled me over his thigh and spanked my backside over and over, hard, in the same way, his naked fingers hard as wood. I found myself groaning again. I couldn't help it. But to the walloping with the strap, this was like spice compared to supper. To say that my cock loved it would be an understatement. I saw the whole room in a bright flash. I saw slaves being very roughly bathed, and others soothed, it seemed, and some being smacked over and over by their grooms in one stage or another of their toilet. I saw some over the knee, as I was. He didn't spank me all that long, but my cock felt like it was made of stone. He brought me up straight. "You're a good boy," he said approvingly. "A very good boy. I have this feeling, but what do I know? If the king or the queen don't take you, you'll still be at court at table or stable." There it was again, that phrase. But I was weeping at his praise and reassurance. Then, realizing I'd said nothing, I answered frantically under my breath, "Yes, sir." "Not required," he laughed. "I didn't ask you a question." Another hard squeeze on my sore bottom, but you'll learn. You might be gagged for a while, but that's to be avoided. Your betters can't see your pretty mouth when you're gagged. And the queen especially does not care for gags on her slaves unless they're being corrected for impertinence. See that you're not corrected for impertinence. We passed many others as we moved towards the far wall. I scanned the countless niches in vain for my precious Sybil. But she might have been one of many sleeping, dark-haired beauties with her head turned away. There were small stools and stepladders by the wall of beds. Suddenly, I was being lifted by Fane and another groom to a niche just above my head. I was slipped into it and onto the softest silken mattress I ever felt. "Over on your back," said Fane, mounting a little ladder. He reached in and tethered my hands by means of leather thongs to a hook just above my head. My arms weren't pulled tight, and it wasn't painful, but there was no way I could touch my cock. "Now you go to sleep, Bren," he said. "Of course you'll twist your neck trying to see all that's going on here. Well, do that and be done with it, and then let sleep come. You'll be surprised how easy it will be for you to sleep. And don't dare to try to turn over, or get your hands free, or pleasure yourself, or you'll be punished in ways you haven't foreseen. Never touch your own cock, or your privates, Bren, never. They don't belong to you, remember." Then he was gone. I was in the soft, silken-lined niche, and I was staring up at the low, painted ceiling, and at my own hands tethered to the hook.
Of course, I turned my head and looked out on the vast room, so much to see. But then sleep came down over me like a veil. Sometime much later, I was turned over, and my hands were tethered loosely at my sides. My cock and balls had been placed on an opening so that they got no friction. I dozed off again with a groom rubbing unguents into my skin all over. There came the prickling, delicious pain when his hands found the raw, abraded skin. But the sensations melted into sleep. 5. It was dusk when I awoke. A soft, golden light filled the tented room, and a young naked slave was lighting the candles in the many standing candelabra. I blinked. The figure of a tall, slender, elegant lady was coming towards me, and gradually I realized it was the red-haired Lady Eva. Two young men walked beside her, and she directed them towards me. I was taken out of the niche carefully and gently planted on my feet, then turned around so that she might inspect me. Her cool hands prodded and felt of me all over. I wondered if this would be worse, more shaming, if she were not so beautiful. "Excellent skin, very fine skin," she said. "Feed him the apples." One of the grooms put a small slice of apple into my mouth and told me to chew it up thoroughly. "You'll always be given apples when you waken, and several times a day to clean your teeth and freshen your mouth," Lady Eva said. "Never go before your masters and mistresses without this little ritual, Bren. Do wake up and answer me." "Yes, my lady. I mean, yes, madam," I said. "You may use that form of address if you like. I'm taking you to the queen." The two attendants were rubbing me down with oil again, and one blotting the excess with a clean linen towel. As I stood there, one did a skilled job of again shaving my beard very close. "Ah, your cock is sensitive, attentive, and beautiful," Lady Eva said. With a shock, I felt her fingers on my balls. She fondled them and patted them very lightly. "Now, you may address the queen as my queen or your majesty. Same for the king, of course, my king, and so forth." "Yes, madam," I said. Another man approached. He was taller than the two grooms and very powerfully built. I had no idea why he was there. My hair was brushed, my fingernails inspected, my toenails, my pubic hair combed, which amazed me. And then the lady pinched my nipples and said they were bright pink, which she liked. Then she told the man we were going to the queen's parlor. He heaved me over his shoulder as if I were no more than a child to him, and holding my ankles firmly in his hands, he headed off behind her, with me dangling down his back, my hands clasped to my neck, and my eyes fixed on Lady Eva's rose-colored silk skirts as she walked before me. The blood was rushing to my head, but that was the least of my concerns. I felt more feeble and powerless than ever before. The man walked very fast, and so did Lady Eva. Through a garden we were moving, and I could hear music around us and the hum of voices, but I could see almost nothing. With a shock, it came to me that we were in a vast place, and lots of people were passing us without so much as a word as to my being carried like this in their midst. Indeed, the noise grew thicker and thicker, and the ground beneath us was layered with overlapping carpets of red and blue with intricate Eastern patterns. Torches flickered brightly all around us, and I could hear the sound of fountains. This was utterly unnerving. To have been examined as I'd been by a few people, and in an enclosed place was one thing, but this was like being carried naked through a marketplace or a fairground. My face was down, hidden, however, and I was very grateful for that. But I peeped from left to right to see what I could, and suddenly saw, with a shock, a gorgeous, noble lady seated at a marble table, who smiled at me. The shock was too much, and I shut my eyes. Then someone else passed and patted my head, saying,
"Lovely boy, Lady Eva."
"Nothing too good for the king and queen," Lady Eva replied airily. Again, shock. I was exposed. My backside, legs, likely my genitals were visible, and there was nothing I could do about it, even if I wanted to do something. The powerful man held my ankles firmly. We entered a stone passage and moved through a vast, echoing hall filled with voices and the soft tread of shoes, and then up a staircase. The lady climbed the steps in front of me, effortlessly. I could hear her, and now I could not see her, and again I closed my eyes because something about the stairs, climbing higher and higher, alarmed me. We must have gone quite high up in the castle before we entered a broad passage and proceeded down it. I saw a floor of polished pavers, carpeted again with a multitude of patterned carpets. All the merchants of Italy and the Orient must have come with these wares, I thought. Doors here and there opened and closed, and lords and ladies passed. I glimpsed brocade and tooled slippers. We came to a stop, and a man's voice announced,
"Lady Eva to see Her Majesty."
We advanced, and the door was closed behind us. The silence of the room suddenly enclosed us. The man pulled down my ankles and flipped me back into his left arm, then turned me around and planted me on my feet and held my bottom firmly as I found my balance. I clamped my hands tightly on the back of my neck, and I stared at the thick, burgundy wool carpet. Silence. The low crackling of a fire and its dim flashing light on the walls and in the corner of my eyes, the sound of breathing, and perhaps a caged bird singing. "Well, you did not exaggerate," said a woman's soft, melodious voice. The Sleeping Beauty! Could it be? I had been told over and over I would be brought here, yet my heart beat wildly inside me, and I trembled. "Yes, I think this is quite remarkable," said Lady Eva. "Now down on your knees, Bren. Yes, like that. Your Majesty, I haven't trained this lovely porklet at all. I've brought him straight from the Hall of Postulants, but I thought you should see him." "You did right. Absolutely right. And little piglet, your posture and demeanor are perfect." The voice was kindly, generous. "Now come here to me. That's it. Slowly. And though you are on your hands and knees, you must be graceful. At all times graceful. Do you know how beautiful you are, little boy?" How could I answer that? I moved forward, the carpet thick and soft under my hands and knees, forward, hoping that soon I'd know if I was going in the right direction. I was, of course, heading towards the source of the voice. Then I saw the legs of a heavily carved oak chair, and I saw great full skirts of sky blue silk and delicate gold tracery and slippers, beautifully shaped slippers with pointed toes. And the voice of Fane still in my mind, I kept moving until I could kiss the slippers of the woman, and I did so. "Ah, that is so touching," she said kindly. "What an excellent boy. You are a gem. Now kneel up so I can see your endowments, and your handsome, strong chest, and your face. I obeyed, hands to the regular position, and I felt my face burning hot. I knew I was blinking and trying to blink back tears. Why were the tears coming so quickly? My cock had never been harder in my life. Staring down, I could see it, blood red, with a shining wet tip. I bit my lip and waited in agony. Nothing that had gone before was quite like this. "Well, you are a fawn," said the queen. "I expect to find hooves on those feet, but no, they're beautiful. Eva, he has the body of a satyr and the face of a cupid." "Yes, your majesty." "And look at all this luxuriant hair." I saw a slender, graceful hand move towards me, the fingers tugging at the dark hair of my chest and moving down my belly, pulling at the hair, gently, sending tingling sensations through me. The fingers plunged into my pubic hair, and the queen laughed and laughed. As before, I thought I might lose consciousness, or at least conscious control of my body. "This is truly a magnificent young fawn," she said. "And your name is Bren, precious one?"
"Yes, my queen,"
I said. My throat was so dry the words came out scratchy and low. My mouth was quivering. "Ha, ha, what a little banquet you are for your mistress." The long tapering fingers touched my cock, but very lightly. I bit down on a gasp. "Now stand up and turn around, young fawn," she said, "without moving your hands. That's it. Good boy. Oh, what a splendid backside." "It's tightly muscled," said Lady Eva, "yet nicely padded. And if you could have seen the spanking with a belt that Lord Gregory gave him just hours ago, well, you wouldn't believe it." "No, he's barely pink," said the queen. "Pink as a rabbit's ear or a kitten's tongue. Turn around towards me again, Bren." I obeyed. I swallowed. My legs were vibrating, but I don't think they were visibly shaking. I heard the sound of a door open.
"Laurent, I'm so glad you've come. Look at this little satyr who arrived today."
A heavy tread approached, and even with my eyes down, I could see the enormous figure of King Laurent beside me. The blood drained from my face, the tears hovered in my eyes. A low laugh of amazement came from the king.
"Well, Eva, darling, this is beyond all imagining."
"Young man, I expect to find pointed ears here." His hand clasped my chin and lifted it.
"And this beard, ah, what a thick beard."
The queen laughed. "I said very nearly the same thing myself," she confessed. "But he's all little boy. Every morsel of him." "This face was just shaved for the second time today, sire," said Lady Eva. "That's going to take attending, and, of course, the hair, all of it, can be trimmed or shaved."
"Oh, no, I wouldn't hear of it," said the queen.
"I love it. Why, even his backside has a nice thin covering of fleecy dark hair. This is sublime. Turn around again, Bren." I obeyed.
"But you must speak up when I give you an order, darling," said the queen behind me. "You must acknowledge that your queen has spoken to you."
I swallowed hard and said, "Yes, my queen," immediately. I didn't dare protest. I'd been taught the opposite.
"I like his voice, too," said the king.
"He's educated," said Lady Eva, "clerk to a duke."
"Ah, very good," said the king. "Well, young Bren,"
he lifted my chin again,
"recite a line to me from Propertius."
"In Latin, sire, or in the translation?" I asked.
The king roared with laughter. "You know Propertius's elegies?" he asked.
"Yes, sire. Amour takes no little happiness in a sprinkling of tears. There is joy in a new slavery as well." I broke off after combining two lines.
"And where did you discover the translation?" the king asked.
"I translated it from the Latin, sire, when I was bored and had nothing else to do," I answered. Was this too bold, too proud? Instantly I regretted it.
"Oh, no, no," cried the queen. "You can't make of him a poet here, Laurent. He's mine, I declare it." "Of course, my darling, my love," said the king. "Don't be so suspicious of me. But this is a fine scholar, and who says his duties can't include the recitation of poetry now and then?"
"In time, perhaps, my lord," said the queen. "Right now, I want him. I don't know quite what I shall do with him."
"I have an idea, your majesty," said Lady Eva.
"Well, then speak," said the queen.
"My queen, your lady ponies are lovely, but it takes two or more to pull even the lightest chariot for you. What about a male pony? A male pony so strong and striking that he can pull your little chariot and you all by himself. I think this would make a magnificent picture."
"That would be quite tasty," said the queen.
"Who's to say I cannot have a male for such a thing?"
"No one," said the king. "But I do want to play with this boy for a while. Can we take the matter slowly?"
"Of course," said the queen. "But couldn't we have him trained in your stables?"
"Your majesty, I can, of course," said Lady Eva. "But why not in your very own stable, right with the girl ponies? Bring the few males, as you select them, into your stable to be trained. Every groom you have knows how to train both male and female ponies."
"I don't see why not," said the queen. "But he is a very sturdy and strong boy, and I thought the boy ponies had harsher training." "Share him with me," said the king. "Put him in with the males for now. Male ponies have a special camaraderie. Let him train with my men, with Cesar and Bastian and Caspian. I'm thinking this boy is strong enough to pull even my solitary chariot. I'll have him trained and then sent to you ready for your equipage. After he's learned with my men, been worked with my men, he can handle your little chariot beautifully."
"Very well," said the queen. "That's fine. But tonight at supper, in the garden, he will be my footstool, and Bren, this is a simple task for a young man who is inherently well-behaved. You'll kneel before my chair, and I assure you, my feet are not heavy."
The king laughed. "He'll do well. But first I think I'll drain the cup, so that it doesn't spill over."
Suddenly, his powerful arm swung round in front of me, and he hoisted me in the air as easily as the strong attendant had done it, flung me over his shoulder, and carried me from the room, leaving the women laughing together. I was only dangling that way for a split second. He slammed a door behind him, and lifted me, and put me on a broad oak sideboard, facing him.
"Look at me, little Pan," he said.
I did. I looked at a face I'd heard described 1,000 times, and none of those peons touched it. He had huge, glittering brown eyes, crinkled at the corners, and a brilliant, generous smile. His skin was dark and lustrous, and his hair a tangled raiment of brown waves.
"Oh, you are so pretty," he said.
"Yes, sire," I whispered.
There was a lump in my throat.
He laughed. "Spread your legs wide. I want that cock for my supper."
He grabbed at my nipples with both his hands, pushing me back against the wall, and then he descended on my cock as I gasped and shut my eyes. His tight lips worked it hard, stroking it back and forth, back and forth, his tongue licking at the tip. I thought I would cry out in ecstasy. His fingers ground at my nipples. I felt nothing, knew nothing but this searing, blinding pleasure. Surely he would turn away when I had to come. I sought respectfully as I could to pull loose, to warn him, moaning frantically, but he clutched my backside, lifting it off the wood, and held me fast to his mouth. It is the king! When I came, I let out a series of choking sobs. I couldn't stop myself. I felt myself dropped down again on the wood and a large hand steadying my chest.
"Cupid's nectar,"
he said. Then he moved away. In a blur, I saw the ceiling, the burning candles of the room, and then his figure again looming before me. He was drinking from a goblet, thirstily, and I could smell the wine. A low laugh came out of him. He seemed enormous, larger than any man I'd ever beheld, and I felt small, deliciously weak. Of course, I myself was a big man, and he was tall, though not a giant, but in my mind he appeared to grow, and I to shrink immeasurably. I melted. I dissolved. I wasn't there. Yet I had never been more present anywhere else in all my existence, seated naked on this broad sideboard, my sore bottom aching on the wood, and my cock limp. And my soul sunk down into some deep stratum of quiet, beyond language. I dared not look at his face. I closed my eyes again. The kingdom! Bellavolton! Oh, Sybil, I pray your hours have been as eventful and as glorious as mine have been.
Tell you what, you tasty little sausage. You may be headed to the stables, all right, but not for a few nights. Not till Queen Beauty and I have had some fun with you.
He stared at my cock. It was already hard again. 6. It was full night, but the gardens were as brightly lighted as if it were day. The roar of voices was all around me, with music rising in waves above it. The queen led me on a scarlet leather leash by a scarlet collar around my neck. She'd combed my hair herself with the gentlest fingers, and she pulled me along on my hands and knees beside her skirts. I was not to lift my head on any account, or a wider collar would be used for me that didn't allow me to lift my head, and she didn't want for that to happen. On and on we walked over the great floor of carpets and soft grass, and carpets once more. I glimpsed figures dancing, heard the quick rhythm of drums or tambourines, and everywhere great shining explosions of laughter and excited conversation. Again and again, people to the right and left bowed to the Queen, "Your Majesty." The hushed and reverent voices hurled their whispers at her feet. I couldn't bear to think of what they saw if they looked at me, if they even noticed me at all, but then my heart would swell with pride. She had chosen me for this, for her pet, to be led like her favored puppy alongside of her. She had chosen me, and on my very first night in the kingdom. Now and then a paddle smacked my bottom hard. But it was not the queen who did this, but Lady Eva. "Straight back now, Bren," she said. "That's it. Now look up just a little, as you must climb this step onto the dais, and you must do it gracefully. The entire court is watching you, young man.
I obeyed.
Under the table now, that's it, said Lady Eva.
And you're to kneel there.
Ah, yes. And now you may crouch down and rest back on your heels and lower your shoulders and rest on your forearms, said the Queen. And put your head down, yes. That's very nice. And don't move and don't speak. You might want to sleep now. You can be a good little footstool and still sleep, but when I prod that pretty cock with my slipper, I want to feel it wake.
I obeyed. The carpet under my feet was soft, and the light poured gently through the thin linen and silk that draped the table, making a long golden corridor here in which I knelt. Right in front of me, I saw another slave being put into place in the very same manner, but he was large-boned and had balls even bigger than mine. He settled down just as I had done, and I saw a man's fancy boot plant itself on his back. A gush of silent tears came out of me. I had never been more devoid of tension, more limp. Except for my cock, of course. The voices of the party were muted, but I could hear the Queen above me chatting with Lady Eva, her slippered foot suddenly rested, small and light. On my back, I lay still, my heart thudding in my ears. My cock, which had been hard all this while, was softening a little, and I became sleepy, wondering if I could hold my position perfectly while I dozed. Then, a delicate hand appeared before me with a bit of fruit, and I heard the Queen speak, "Here, precious Bren, here." I hadn't eaten since morning, and I licked the bits of fruit from her beautiful and graceful fingers. I was dozing when a dish with more fruit was given to me to eat. It contained a thick, sweet meat sauce and bits of meat that were savory and delicious. "No hands, darling," she said. "You eat like a good little slave, like a good little puppy dog." I would have done anything she said, any way she said to do it. I had obeyed all the others to be admitted, to be received. I obeyed her because I loved her, because every word from her thrilled me, and when I heard the king's deep voice above, when I heard him talking to her and laughing in that natural, spontaneous way of his, I knew I loved him too. And to think that I would become their pony. A pony for Her Majesty, and a pony for His Majesty. I had no real idea what it meant to be a pony, but only that I would be theirs, their very own, and I would do all in my power to please them forever. Ah, beauty's kingdom! I have made it so far. I am at home. I am the pet of the sleeping beauty herself. I am here. And nothing beyond this kingdom any longer matters at all. Hours passed. I slept. The dish was gone. Now and then both the Queen's feet rested on my back, sometimes only one. Then I was waked and pulled by my leash, and once again, walking as I had before, only now the garden seemed livelier than ever. I felt my cock stirring again. Getting hard. I heard Lady Eva say, "Yes, perfect," and something feathery touched my cock, and I jumped. "He's a natural," she said. "Perfect attitude, perfect responses." This seemed a dream of uncommonly vivid intensity, something too palpably exciting to be mere real life. It was not easy to move up the stone stairs on hands and knees, and Lady Eva corrected me several times on grace. In the Queen's parlor again, I was led to the side of Lady Eva's chair. "Now, spank that luscious little bottom," said the Queen. "I want to see it bright red." What had I done? But then I realized
I'd done nothing. I was being enjoyed, not punished.
Up over my knee, little fawn, said Lady Eva, and put that pretty chin in my left hand. The Queen wants to see your face, and don't try to hide it.
A pause. I could feel and hear the paddle in my mind, but in fact, all was silence. I lay across her skirts, over her knee, hands pressing into my neck with feverish pressure, and waited. Her skirts tickled my cock, tortured it.
Your Majesty, don't you want to enjoy this little repast yourself?
Lady Eva said.
I do, but I'll enjoy it even more, said the Queen, if you do it.
You do it better than I do, Eva.
Your Majesty, no, truly you do.
Well, this precious little portling hasn't been spanked over the knee yet, said Lady Eva, as though reflecting.
And I do so love doing it.
Bren? I want perfection now, little boy, do you hear me? Lips sealed, hands clamped to your neck as if they were bound.
Yes, madam, I said.
And this unleashed a sob in my throat, but my lips didn't release it. The tears rose in my eyes. This was infinitely more humiliating than standing for a beating with a belt, more humiliating somehow even than being walked on a leash, puppy-style, in the gardens. When my groom Fane had done it earlier, it had not registered with me so intensely. It had been abrupt, simple, brief. But now, in this perfumed parlor, with the Queen herself to watch what was happening, it seemed the greatest test of submission I had yet to endure. Yet it never occurred to me to beg, plead, or try to move away, or to protest in any way. I was delivered utterly to the moment, helpless, as if I were bound hand and foot. Though my eyes were half closed, I looked at the fire and wished with all my heart I could see the Queen, or at least her slippers. It was a paddle, not a belt as I expected it would be.
Count the spanks, little goatling, said Lady Eva.
Yes, madam. 3, 4, 5, 6.
The delicious, simmering pain spread through the skin and then deep into my backside, or so it seemed.
10, 11, 12, 13.
Soon, with all my might, I was struggling to lie still, my arms tensing, my fingers rigid as I struggled not to move, not to reach back like a helpless child, to shield myself, and I knew my legs and bottom were moving.
At last, Lady Eva stopped. She gave a great sigh.
I lay, waiting, my backside so hot, surely it must glow in the shadows, my thighs blazing. I had counted some 30 spanks. I was coughing and shivering with sobs, and lips, closed or not. I couldn't keep quiet. It was impossible. My body was spasming with my sobs. I heard the fire crackling loudly. Suddenly the pain in my sore hindquarters increased, then softened and spread out all through me in a warm, delicious way. And my tears flowed even more freely.
I belong to you, my queen, I was thinking, if only I could say it, and to you, Lady Eva, who lifted me from the new applicants and brought me here. I only want to please.
Kneel up now, Bren. Over here before me, said the Queen.
At once I obeyed, struggling to withdraw from Lady Eva's lap without touching her in any disrespectful way. The sensation in my cock doubled and kicked and throbbed. I moved forward towards the Queen's skirts on my hands and knees.
Closer,
said the queen. There was the long, delicate hand again, with its shining nails, and a lovely perfume rose from her skirts as though they'd been washed in rose water. I struggled closer. I was almost touching her. Her fingers examined my erect cock and my pubic hair again. I'd love to see this all brushed with gold, she said. Yet I like the blackness of it, so very black. She felt of my thigh, inside, and pulled gently at the hair. Bren, my precious fawn, she said, my little satyr. She rose suddenly, her skirts sweeping over my face and form, blinding me. And then I watched, furtively, as she walked to the far wall. She stood against it, beside a sideboard with silver candles on it. How shapely and young she appeared with her small waist and her bright yellow hair. Come here, on your hands and knees, she said. I obeyed, and as I came up before her, she lifted her skirts gracefully to reveal her long, wonderfully curved white legs and the golden triangle of her pubic hair, such a delicate sex, such a sweet, tender-looking sex. Stand up and take me, little fawn, she said. I rose up at once. If I had stopped to think, I would have lost my nerve in disbelief. Put your arms around my neck and your lips on mine, she said. I did as she told me, her high, round breasts warm against my chest through the fabric of her gown, her face against mine, soft and tender as a fresh peach. Her mouth tasted of honey. My cock rammed clumsily at her little cleft. But then I felt her fingers there, parting her lips, guiding me. Such a girlish sex. So shy. Bad little boy, she said. Then the hot sheath had descended on me, wet and small like the sex of a girl. Her hand clenched my sore backside. I could feel her little crypt throbbing against the whole length of my shaft. Kiss me, and take me hard, hard as if you'd found me in the street of a besieged town, she said. I thrust into her blindly and madly, as hard and as fast as I could, while my lips closed over her, tasting her sweetness, my eyes looking down at her closed eyelids. Yes, she said, yes. Harder, my little woodland god. Come and carry me away with you. I rammed her against the wall. I bucked and rode her hard until I suddenly spent, unable to keep back a loud moan, and then she rode the wave with me. At last, I stood, still holding her. All right, little boy, said Lady Eva. Down on your hands and knees. You're going to eat your supper now from the little bowl on the hearth. Come. The queen smiled at me. I looked full at her, into her enchanting blue eyes, such pure blue eyes, so trusting, so loving. And then I looked down bashfully. She kissed me. I dropped to the floor to obey. I was so delightfully tired, my head swam. I could smell the food suddenly, beef and gravy. I crawled towards the steaming dish. With your mouth only, piglet, said Lady Eva, every morsel. I wrestled with the first few bites, and then thought, why am I holding back? And for whom? And then I began to eat faster. That's it, Bren. I tell you, Your Majesty, this is the finest little postulant to come through the gates. Yes, said the queen, but I think His Majesty is quite delighted as well with the girl who came with him.
So the king was with Sybil? I went on eating until I was licking the empty dish. My face was smeared with gravy, but my heart leapt at the thought of Sybil pleasing. Sybil being with the king. Sybil being accepted as I'd been. Lady Eva pulled me up and wiped at my mouth and chin a little roughly with a napkin. You will learn to do all this just a little bit better, she said, holding me by a lock of my hair on the top of my head. But you are a nonpareil. 7. I lay in a small bedchamber with no furnishings. A great, brawny attendant had carried me back to the postulant's hall. And there a sleepy groom I did not know had bathed me and oiled me with amazing tenderness. He'd stopped to kiss me many times, rubbing oil into my fingers and my toes, and spreading some thick, healing compound over my sore backside. He was so gentle he seemed some sort of spirit in the drowsy, quiet night in which all slept. Then I was placed in this bedroom. No restraints, no holes in the bed, just Chinese cushions and incense, and a tiny silver lamp with a little shivering flame sending shadows leaping along the low ceiling. Of course, I didn't dare to touch myself to try to relive what had happened and use my own hand to relive the pleasure I felt. When the door opened, I woke with a start, realizing that somehow I must have been sleeping. Sybil stood in the door, naked. Her long black hair hung down, covering her breasts. Her pubic hair was a perfect little heart, it seemed, and her face was glowing. She beamed at me. You can't be here. This isn't real, I said. Oh, I'm here all right, she said. She dropped down on her hands and knees and crawled into the bed next to me. A sweet fragrance came from her skin and her hair. Queen Beauty has sent me. She says we're to have our recreation together until tomorrow. You mean it? I sat up. But I thought they would never allow such a thing. Well, in the old days the kingdom did not, said Sybil. She turned to me, resting on her elbow, and ran her fingers through my hair. She had a glow to her. Bren, she adores you. I didn't know what to say. Her face was animated and flushed, and she spoke excitedly, as though she'd traveled to distant lands of the mind since I'd last seen her, as if time itself was meaningless here. She says slaves must have time to be with their fellows, as she puts it. She says in the old days they stole such time, but she will not have such deceitfulness. She grants many slaves a respite with others, and as we came together, she says we may take our recreation together. She went on, her eyes wide and her lips glistening. The queen says we may do as we like during this time together, that village ponies had that privilege even in their punishment. Recreation together. And we're to have it. She says when it's time for us to rest up for our duties, they'll come and they'll separate us. I never expected it. Sybil started kissing me. Her mouth was sweet and fresh, and her hair tickled me as it fell down around me. My dear, I said, countless times tonight I've been called a little fawn, a satyr, a god. But I'm not. I'm only human. Oh, come now, Bren, she said. And sure enough, I was rising to the occasion. I bore down on her, driving my cock into her, my hands holding her arms high above her head, my tongue lapping at her mouth, forcing it open. Not a thought came to my mind, not a flash of memory, only Sybil, as it had been only the queen, and before that, only the king. And all fantasies of the past were gone like thin bits of silk caught in a wind and carried heavenward. Before morning,
I held her close and wept as I told her some of what had happened. I couldn't possibly recount all. She was much calmer recounting her own adventures. She wiped my tears, and she did now and then become dewy-eyed and a little soft with feeling, but she spoke more with distant amazement. Sybil's introduction to the kingdom had been much the same as mine, though obviously they'd bathed her in compliments since the beginning as to her irresistible attributes, and I didn't see any reason to go on about the insults I'd received. The infamous Lord Gregory had also paddled her to test her, and so had another prince, whose name she'd never known, and also a great lady who had made her perform many servile tasks. I never found it so pleasurable before in my life to gather discarded garments from the floor of a room, or arrange slippers in a closet primarily with the use of my teeth. She laughed. And Bren, the lady's voice was so gentle with me, and loving and comforting all the while. And then do you know what happened, Bren? I discovered that this great lady was none other than the Queen. She put me in her bed and toyed with me as if I were a doll. In the great gardens, Sybil had been tethered to a huge X-cross for exhibition, along with other new slaves, for the approval of the king. Bren, it was liberating being bound like that, my wrists up and far apart, my ankles near the base of the arms of the cross. I thought they'd blindfold me as some of the slaves were blindfolded, but they were crying frantically, and I was not. I'd been polished with silver pigment and oil beforehand, and they decorated me with all manner of pretty blossoms. I was there for hours in a swoon. I tell you, it was a positive swoon. Passing lords and ladies touched me, examined me, played with me. It never stopped for very long. I'd fall asleep and then waken to hands stroking me between my legs, soft voices talking of the smallest details of my body, praising my little juices and my nipples, making me blush. But I was so sublimely helpless, Bren, so free. I could twist and struggle, and it didn't matter. Indeed, they seemed to be amused by it. My groom told me to put on a good show for my masters and mistresses, and then laughed and said he needn't bother to teach me a thing. She lay on her arm, gazing into my eyes. Then this great lord came, the Grand Duke. He was most refined and spoke with such courtesy. I was told later he was the late queen's uncle. He wanted me taken down for him to play with. He was most insistent in a gentlemanly way. He liked my eyes, my mouth. He wanted to see my bottom. He said he loved the texture of my skin. The groom told him he must walk behind the scaffold, and there he could see my bottom plainly enough. Bren, when the Grand Duke spanked my bottom, it nearly brought me to climax. All the while he had his left hand against the collar around my neck, and he was speaking to me in the most cultured voice. Darling, darling, he said, you're the finest of the new stock that I've seen. Some slaves are infinitely better than others. Bren, his voice could have brought me to the pinnacle without the sharp spanks. I understand. But my groom said the Grand Duke would have to wait to have me to himself. The Grand Duke didn't give up easily, but he was never really rude. Lovely, I said. Bren, it's over. All our struggles, our hopes, our dreams, it's over. We're here. For 6 months, Sybil, I said. We can be rejected in 6 months. But they won't reject us, Bren. I know they won't. I faced my worst moment with the Queen, obeying her instructions to straighten her quarters, and when she paddled me, I only wanted to please her more. That is the key, Bren. I love her and want to please her, and I do not care precisely why. What do you mean? Why? Do I want to please her because she is beautiful and sweet? Or does she seem beautiful and sweet to me because she is strict and demanding? I don't know, and I don't care. We were all alone, the queen and I. No one was there, and the queen said that I had taught her things. I couldn't imagine what. It didn't matter what she said, it was the tone of her voice, her air of easy command, the way she felt of my breasts, cuddled me, kissed me, and punished me. I was so sore by then, and yet I was utterly pliant.
She paused. She kissed me lovingly, her tongue playing on my teeth.
Bren, you know how big the king is. What a tall man.
He's larger than life in all ways, I said.
Yes, well, after the banquet, when I was given to him, I knew a kind of exalted fear. The sound of his deep voice produced a great, dreamy, and lofty abandon in me. He plunged his cock into me, Bren, his cock, and it filled me as I've never been filled, worked me as I've never been worked. Oh, you do not mind my confessing this, do you?
Certainly not, I murmured. Go on.
He never stripped off his clothes or went near the bed, but simply took me as if I were a light, diminutive thing that he could taste effortlessly, pumping into me as he remained standing. And when he was finished with me, he had the groom slip a jeweled red glove over his right hand, and he plunged his fingers into me and touched secret places I hadn't known existed, as if my most private parts were known to him, like a valley in which he'd wandered many a time. Bren, I was gasping, groaning, out of my mind. I have never been so thoroughly worked, drained.
Yes, I said. This was after the evening supper in the gardens, as I said, and I hoped and prayed he'd let me sleep somewhere in his chamber, anywhere.
But he kissed me goodbye, tenderly, and gave me over to Lady Eva, and said to her that I must be trained in the queen's stables, Bren, that I was to be a pony girl for the queen. Lady Eva said this was a great honor, and that I'd be taken there very soon. Bren, what can this mean? I know what the words signify, but what will it be like to become a filly in harness, pulling a coach or a chariot?
I don't know, Sybil, I confessed, but I'm to find out what it means to be a steed myself.
I hope it's like the X-cross in the garden, she said with a deep sigh. She smiled, sleepily and dreamily. I love being bound. I love the feel of the straps on my wrists and my ankles. I love the fragrance of the leather and gilding. I love the grooms who have firm hands. They don't all have firm hands.
No.
It was late, very late, when the king sent me off. The whole castle was quiet. Yet who should come down the passage but the Grand Duke, and Lady Eva allowed him some minutes with me in his chamber. I had not even been bathed since I was with the king, but when Lady Eva told the Grand Duke, he thought it amusing that she even cared. I was brought on hands and knees by a leash into his quarters. Why, it had the grandeur of an audience hall, his immense parlor, and he examined me all over, kissing me and squeezing my flesh, and burying his face in my hair. Such an elegant man. He said he was honored to share my little secret bower with the king. When he took me, it was with hard, slow thrusts. He's older, of course, but he was incomparable in his grace, his deliberation, his slow rhythm. He brought out of me all I had left to give when I'd thought I had nothing. And like the king, he was standing while he took me. He called me his sweet little parcel and his finchling, and he teased me about being a plump little bird with a very red tail.
It might have sounded vulgar coming from someone else.
Tail?
I mean, such a common word. But from him, it sounded affectionate and tantalizing to me. He did spank me a little, but then Lady Eva was standing by, and the great clock in his parlor struck the hour, and he let me go. I wish I had seen him, I said, known who he was. Sybil, you do realize the nature of this paradise, don't you? That there are all kinds of strength, all flavors of mastery.
Yes, darling. And he was such a distinguished man.
Yes, an older, distinguished man.
And then the king and the queen and...
She sighed. Yes, all of them.
What do I want, Bren?
She asked.
Do I want to be the queen's filly? Or do I want to be the Grand Duke's little finchling with a very red tail?
Maybe you'll come to be both, Sybil, I said. I snuggled against her, felt her hot breasts pulsing against my chest, her hand playing idly on my back.
Bren, do you think anyone will come looking for us?
She asked.
I laughed.
It woke me out of my drowsiness to laugh. I don't care if someone comes looking for me, I said.
Nor do I. But I asked Lady Eva about it before she gave me over to be bathed. She said the king and queen would never hear such requests. No one looking for us would get past the gates. I was so glad to hear this.
They'll simply disown us, perhaps, I said.
Again, I don't care.
I've cared about a multitude of things in the last 24 hours, but about that, I do not care.
She was silent. I opened my eyes.
She had finally dozed off and slept peacefully and deeply. I touched her lips carefully with my fingers. Sweet Sybil. 8. The following evening, we were anointed in the